All right, our second panel, if we could ask everyone to resume your seats quickly so we can begin our second panel. This discussion will be Behind the 9/11 Commission, Flaws in the Process, a Staff Report, a Citizen's Critique. We're going to begin with John Judge, Staff and 9/11 Citizens Watch. John?
Thank you. We're running late, and I wanted to keep my comments short, but I think that it's in the best interest of everyone to take a second look at what we've been given as a final report of the National Commission on Terrorist Acts Upon the United States. It's being seen as an authoritative report, often by people that haven't taken the time to read it. It was hailed as a bipartisan consensus in the making, and a final word, and I think all day today you're going to see that it rarely meets that standard. It was followed by two monographs, and then a year later, one more, although each of the nine investigative teams are working on a monograph. Representative Hamilton said that we will get no further monographs from those investigative teams, and it's interesting that the monographs that were released contained a page from Director Philip Zelikow of the Commission, basically exempting them from the conclusions of the monograph, saying that the quote is, while the commissioners have been briefed on the work and have had the opportunity to review earlier drafts of some of this work, they have not approved this text, and it does not necessarily reflect their views. This seems to indicate that while there might have been a bipartisan consensus by the commissioners in this report, there seems to reflect there might not have been a consensus between the investigative staff and the rest of the people on the commission. It was a commission that was beset with problems from the beginning, not only the obstruction in its creation, but underfunding that wasn't really effectively solved in a limited time period for political purposes. And even though they did a great deal of work, 2,000 interviews, collected documents, the report is essentially self-referential. The reason I say that is that almost 100 pages at the end of the report, in tiny print, have footnotes to interviews and documents and evidence, not a page of which, classified or unclassified, can be seen by the public. The National Security Archives recently did a Freedom of Information Act request for every single document listed in the footnotes from all the agencies involved, and every single request was denied. And denied in some cases on grounds that don't fit the legality. So basically you have a report where you're being asked to trust the investigators that what they saw in the evidence led them to their conclusions, and you don't need to verify it independently, but I don't think that's the way it should work in a democracy. They took some public testimony, but that testimony was marked by being primarily focused on the recommendations of the Commission and its policy, not on the events of 9/11, and the majority of that testimony on the events was taken at the end of the long discussion about policy. In other words, they were making the policy recommendations before they found out what happened on 9/11. And the actual author of the report is still unstated, but I think in recent articles in the New Republic by Ernst May, we get an inkling, and also the release of the book Blind Spot, part of which was commissioned to be written by the 9/11 Commission by Timothy Naftali, that Naftali is at least the intellectual author of the report and its primary conclusion that this was an intelligence failure. And that's the focus of his book. Zelikow, the director, Ernst May, who also worked on the commission staff at the top level, and Naftali, who was commissioned to do that work, all three are part of the University of Virginia Miller Center on Public Affairs, a rather interesting institution that bears some scrutiny. And they have a long history together of scholarship at Yale and Harvard that interlinks with studies of U.S. intelligence and including contracted work with U.S. intelligence concerning covert operations. And I think that that's one of the main problems that exist when you create a national security state is how do you investigate it without involving the people that are already part of that national security state. And this report reflects that in the choice that they made of the people that would be brought onto the staff. And I'm sure we'll be addressing some of that later, but they say it openly in Ernst May's article that that was actually their priority, to get people that had been part of earlier covert operations. And yet at the same time, the report fails, as we'll see in testimony later today, to address the historical framework of the covert operations that seem to have led into 9/11. The missing white paper was mentioned, and it did show up in England. In the British press, they said that a white paper about the suspects and the evidence was given to them in order to get them to participate in the war in Afghanistan. And the quote in the British press was, "It's not enough to go to court, but it's enough to go to war." And so I'm not sure what the paper would show or what kind of evidence that is, but it isn't evidence that we ever got a chance to look at. This commission's report is not a rush to judgment. It's rather a rush to exoneration. And it fails to really hold people accountability. And doing that, it doesn't make a witch hunt out of an investigation. But having standards of accountability, at least calling witnesses that might be accountable people in the events, would lead to a rigorous investigation and maybe getting at the truth, because people might be more forthcoming. In the beginning, the commission didn't even take testimony under oath. And Governor Keene, the director, told us that they thought people would be more forthcoming if they were not under oath. We found that a little counterintuitive. So I think that in addition to its own flawed assumptions and how it approached it, it also faced ongoing obstruction by the White House that refused to release documents, even refused to release the classified version of the joint Senate and House Intelligence Inquiry study that had been prepared by some of the people that sat on the 911 Commission and who had sat in on the classified testimony of that commission. And they did that consistently in terms of who would be testifying publicly and whether it would be under oath or not. There was very little transparency and very little accountability. They were exempt under the law from the Freedom of Information Act in their work, and they were exempt from the Family Advisory Committee Act, so that there couldn't be any formal advisory committee by the family members that were here, and no family member was part of the board. And by approaching the whole matter as an intelligence failure in the report, it obscured the evidence that what was normally a standard operating procedure in the period prior to 9/11 fell apart, apparently, in the months around and on that day. And it led to them pursuing leads and suspects, basically accepting earlier reports without doing further follow-up, blaming certain suspects, even though the evidence is that we don't yet clearly know who the suspects were that got onto the plane, and that's because several people have come forward saying that their identity was stolen, basically, by these people. So if we track that identity back in time, it doesn't tell us whether it's the person using it, a second person using it, or the original person involved. And it's only that evidence, tracing those identities back in time, and primarily the testimony of three people that are still in protective custody, that the commission could not interview. I'm talking about Ramzi Youssef, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Bin al-Shib, who are suspects or masterminds in the plot, never been brought to court. No one can question them. The commission was not even allowed to talk to their handlers or interrogators. All they could rely on were the printed statements taken from these people in custody. We don't know if the statements are accurate or real. We don't know if they were conditions of torture. We have no idea because there was no way to check it. And so we're left with a story that comes from people that we can't get to, and we're left with a story that perhaps is giving us the wrong direction in terms of how we're looking. But until we open up the report and until we can look at the actual evidence and compare it and begin to actually investigate further on many of the areas that the commission ignored, then we have a report that doesn't eventually serve the mandate that this commission was required to take care of looking at the truth of terrorist acts upon the United States. And it was acts, it was plural, and another terrorist act upon the United States the commission completely ignored was the anthrax incidents that followed about a month later and that have never been adequately investigated or brought forward. That investigation seems to have stopped at a point where they got to the gate of Fort Detrick, and then there hasn't been anything since, and this is going on years in the situation. So,
okay. John Judge, a member of Citizens Watch, we should say an advocacy group that diligently monitor the government's actions, and currently a staff assistant with Representative McKinney's office.